Well, hi. My name is Eve Decker, and it's a total honor to be here. Thank you, James, for inviting me, and thanks all of you for sticking around. Happy New Year. I want to talk and sing tonight about impermanence. And about in my explorations of impermanence, what I feel are the fruits of really being with impermanence, which are compassion and gratitude. So I want to talk and sing tonight about impermanence, compassion, and gratitude. And then maybe at the end, also a little bit about intention. You know, or you will know if you stay on this path for any length of time, that the Buddha made a lot of lists. And I was thinking, you know, it seems sort of heady to make a lot of lists and, you know, have all these different sort of descriptions of experience and of how to live a life with less suffering. But really, I think what the Buddha was doing was observing phenomena and then noting what he saw to his followers, who passed it on to their followers until they started writing it down. Because when we begin to notice in mindfulness practice, when we begin to notice what's happening in the moment, we see that all these things that we learn about are interrelated. So awareness and kindness, impermanence and compassion. And, you know, and so I think it's really brilliant. Like, the more we drop into mindfulness, the more we see that all of these things, they just all go together. One is a piece. Mindfulness and kindness. So first of all, just a little bit about, more about mindfulness practice. One of the things that I really like in mindfulness practice is really feeling how we are always in contact with the earth. I mean, maybe you could argue that when we're in an airplane, we're not in contact with the earth, but even the airplane itself is made of earth. And so are we, made of earth. So anytime we feel ungrounded or lost in ruminative thought, with awareness practice, with mindfulness practice, this is something that's always here, is this, the earth holding us. And we come from that. And not only that, but always here in this moment is the breath. So in some way, we're always being kept alive by sky, always being sustained. And because we're conditioned to be in mind, to be in thought, we can lose touch with that, or never having been in touch with it at all. But it's always there. And it's really, really comforting. Neem Karoli Baba, not a Buddhist teacher, a non-dual teacher from India, taught everything is impermanent except the love of God. And forgive the word God if it doesn't work for you. But except the love or the nurturance of the sacred. And we can find that, again, not in dogma so much or in thought, but actually directly dropping in. We feel earth and sky sustaining and holding us in every moment. So in this thinking about impermanence, I wanted to start with that because I want to tell you that today I was at the funeral of the father of a very dear friend. And it's at Mountain View Cemetery in Oakland. And after the beautiful ceremony, we lowered the casket into the ground. And then we put the dirt over the casket. And, you know, it's so beautiful to me that we sort of pop out of earth, mother body, and we go back to earth, mother body. And we're here for this short little time. I think it's completely fascinating that we're here for this short little time. I mean, I think it's an interesting fact and weird that we don't like spend more time talking about it. And I think the reason that we don't spend more time talking about it is that it can seem scary. Impermanence can seem scary and certainly sad. And so we use our mechanisms of, you know, distraction and minimization and denial, and sort of imagine that we're here forever, but we're not. There's a chant that is sung throughout Southeast Asia and has been for hundreds and hundreds of years, translated to English. The common translation is, "All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings great happiness." I love that, but I thought that was weird. Like, to be in harmony with this truth brings great happiness? So the word sukha, which is translated here as happiness, I retranslated it for my own singing as peace. So I now sing it as, "All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings peace." But I'm, like you, a yogi on the path, and I think it may come to a point where I can see that to be in harmony with the truth of impermanence could really bring great, great happiness. And I'll say more about that. But first, to sing, let's sing together this beautiful chant in English. If you know it, sing it with me. And if you don't know it, sing it with me. All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings peace. All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings peace. All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings peace. All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings peace. All things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings peace. So that's a fundamental teaching in Buddhism, and but not only Buddhism. This is from Hafiz in the Muslim tradition, deepening the wonder. Death is a favor to us, but our scales have lost their balance. The impermanence of the body should give us great clarity. Deepening the wonder in our senses and in our eyes. Of this mysterious existence, we share and are surely just traveling through. If I were in the tavern tonight, Hafiz would call for drinks. And as the master poured, I would be reminded that all I know of life and myself is that we are just a midair flight of golden wine between the pitcher and the cup of the sacred. If I were in the tavern tonight, I would buy freely for everyone in this world. Because our marriage with the cruel beauty of time and space cannot endure very long. Death is a favor to us, but our minds have lost their balance. The miraculous existence and impermanence of form always makes the illumined ones laugh and sing. Impermanence always makes the illumined ones laugh and sing. Here we find it again. To be in harmony with this truth of impermanence brings great happiness. So where I am with this is, so he says in this poem, you know, if I were in the tavern tonight, I would buy drinks for everyone. Because the more I sink into how impermanent everything is, Joseph Goldstein says, anything could happen at any time. The more I sink into the radical impermanence of this life, the more I'm inclined towards love and generosity. Because it's also poignant. And it's also beautiful. So you know how I was saying before about how permanence kind of, I feel, brings us to these other beautiful practices of compassion and gratitude, which I feel are really the only awake responses in this life. With impermanence being sort of the rule of the land, when there's sorrow or difficulty or loss, awareness would ask that we bring kindness and compassion. And when there's beauty and safety and blessing and well-being, awareness would say, be grateful. And not only for like the big things like, you know, a birth, but, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh says, be grateful for the non-toothache. You know, neutral things are not something to be skipped over. They also deserve gratitude. This is Mary Oliver. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight. It leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It's what I was born for. To look. To listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclimation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab. The daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these, the untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. With practice, we come to sit on a cushion. For years, the first 10, 15 years of practice for me, I found meditation rather odious. I still do sometimes. I'm restless. I want to move. But what we're learning here, what we're teaching ourselves here, is we're just teaching our puppy minds to come back. To come back here and notice what's here now. Because it's fleeting. And it's miraculous. And it's precious. And worthy of our attention. But the mind can't just do that in its normal ways. So we're training it how to do that. It's very beautiful. And then once you practice for a while, there's other great things too. There's a refuge in it. There's a... One of my teachers, Tanisara, she was a Buddhist monastic and a nun in Thailand for 12 years. And then she went to South Africa, where she's lived ever since for 20 years, working with people who are dying of HIV/AIDS. And she said, sometimes the suffering is so immense, really the only solution is to come back into the present moment, where we find the simplicity of earth in contact with body and breath. So this practice brings refuge, but it also brings the capacity when we're in the grocery store to more and more and more see the beauty of the people in line with us and have patience with them. More and more and more patience with all of us for being our imperfect selves. This is from Ellen Bass. What if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm. Brush your fingertips along the lifeline's crease. When a man pulls his wheeled suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of me doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember they're going to die. A friend told me she'd been with her aunt. They'd just had lunch, and the waiter, a young gay man with plum black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed her aunt's powdered cheek when they left. Then they walked half a block and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon spume have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are? Soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time. When I remember dying, I'm more ready to show up. At the funeral today, my friend's brother, this man who died, his son, and one of the man whose granddaughters, they both spoke about their regret about not having spent more time with the father, the grandfather. And I think that's natural. And I don't want to encourage myself or any of us ever to have regret, because we're all doing the best we can. But here in this moment, to set intention around showing up for ourselves and our loved ones. This is a song I wrote called Cemetery. I like walking in the cemetery. It's beautiful there in the spring. Buttercups are blooming every place, and the grass is thick and green. I appreciate the company of the dead. I heard it was Don Juan who said, keep death upon your shoulder, it will remind you to love. Sitting quiet with my heart, a thought welled up in me one day. What if someone drops a bomb? Have I said all I must say? No, my heart cried out to me. It really must be said. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. I like walking in the cemetery. It's so beautiful there in the summer. I throw a frisbee with a friend and we look at the sky in wonder. I appreciate the company of the dead. I think it was Don Juan who said, keep death upon your shoulder. It will remind you to love. Complacent ice, hard and cold, protection from the fear. But like the sun that melts, a thought that helps is that soon none of us will be here. Am I ready for the time when the one I take for granted is dying? Remembering, I hold a friend and whisper thanks for this moment we're sharing. I like walking in the cemetery. So beautiful there in the fall. The changing leaves fall from the trees like they do from a song. I appreciate the company of the dead. I went and read the page where Don Juan said, keep death upon your shoulder. It will remind you to love. Considering the folks I hurt while struggling to be happy, I hope you'll find it in you to forgive me. And as far as I'm concerned, when I reflect upon the ending, all will be forgiven. The strongest feeling is love. I like walking in the cemetery. It's so beautiful there in the winter. The cold, contented tombstones sing praise of friends and strangers. I appreciate the company of the dead. I thank Mr. Don Juan who said, keep death upon your shoulder. It will remind you to love. It will remind you to love. There's a practice that some Buddhist practitioners do, especially in Asia, of sitting in cemeteries, and some cemeteries have bones and decomposing bodies. Sitting there, that's too much for me. I've never done that. I have teachers who've done that. I don't wish to do that. But what I do sometimes, and what you offer to you is a possible practice if you wish to try it. This is not, again, remembering, I really hold that the wisdom that a deep knowing of impermanence can bring peace and possibly deep happiness as well. So with that in mind, a practice that I like to do is imagine my last breath, because it's going to come and I don't know when. And so just imagine it's the last breath. And one thing that always happens to me, even after years of doing this practice, is that I'm always glad it's not my last breath. And I get to have more time to experience this world through my senses, and set intentions towards doing good and trying my best to do those things. But one of these days, that moment is going to come. And what I like about it, too, is that it keeps, again, that word poignancy comes to mind, or vibrancy. It keeps me wanting to be here. And I think the other thing that can really bring peace about impermanence is that if we have been doing this kind of practice where we're dropping into the present over and over, we're observing impermanence, and we're bringing in awareness, which itself is a magical, beautiful quality, and compassion and gratitude, which are both forms of kindness, then when that time comes for someone we love or a being we love, we won't be so totally caught off guard. But we will have remembered, oh yeah, we knew this was going to come. It won't be so totally caught off guard. And we will have remembered already to tell that being or show that being that we love them. So it makes the endings easier. I wanted to say more about, though, about loss, because it's hard. And it's not just loss that's hard. There are various challenges that come to us that are difficult. And thinking about compassion as it relates to impermanence, let's talk and feel a little more into that. One of the ways that impermanence is so wonderful is that the teaching is, and this is what's taught over and over, and this is my experience too, and yours is probably as well. Things really do end, but the mind doesn't know that. The mind tends to think that things go on and on. But when things are hard, this too shall pass. When things are hard, impermanence to the rescue. And I wish we could all remember that. I especially wish we could teach that to our young people. Because so much suffering comes from the mind thinking. Raise your hand if you've heard the Buddhist teaching of the second arrow, of the second arrow, the two arrows. Okay, so just briefly, that teaching is, this is just really in a nutshell, that there is some suffering that just comes with life. And we can think of that as the first arrow. But we make it so much more painful by shooting in a second arrow, which doesn't need to be shot. And that second arrow is what the mind does with pain. And one of the things the mind often does with pain is it thinks this pain is never, ever going to go away. And that in itself is a painful thought. So we don't need to shoot that second arrow, and we will do that less if we remember impermanence. So I'm going to sing you another song that I wrote. But actually, before that, here's a little Rilke. We have no reason to harbor any mistrust against our world, for it is not against us. If it has its terrors, they are our terrors. If it has abysses, these abysses belong to us. If there are dangers, we must try to love them, and only if we could arrange our lives in accordance with the principle that tells us that we must always trust in the difficult, then what now appears to us to be alien will become our most intimate and trusted experience. How could we forget those ancient myths that stand at the beginning of all races, the myths about dragons that at the last moment are transformed into princesses? Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are only princesses waiting for us to act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is in its deepest essence something helpless that wants our love. So you must not be frightened if a sadness rises before you, larger than any you've ever seen, if an anxiety like light and cloud shadows moves over your hands and everything that you do. You must realize that something has happened to you. Life has not forgotten you, that it holds you in its hands and will not let you fall. Why do you want to shut out of your life any uneasiness, any miseries, or any depressions? For after all, you do not know what works these conditions you are doing inside you. For after all, you do not know what work these conditions are doing inside you. Radical trust. So that is really radical trust, not only in the impermanence, but also in life. You know the Rumi poem, Guest House. I want to sing to you, but I love these poems too. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. They may be clearing you out for some new delight. The difficult thought, the shame, the malice, meet them all at the door laughing and bring them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. It's hard to have radical trust when we don't have not only a deep understanding of impermanence really helps with that, but also sangha, community really helps with being able to welcome in the difficult. That's a little digression, but I just didn't want to leave that out. It really helps. Sometimes we need each other to hold. Okay, so this is a song about impermanence regarding the difficult. It's called Faith. The sky is gray against the landscape of your heart. It's been that way for far too long. You toss and turn, waiting for change to come. You wonder where you're going wrong. You call your friends, you go to work, you say your prayers, and will this end? You keep on wondering. Although we try, we can't forget the journey of the soul. You gotta let it go, take it on faith. Let it go, take it on faith. It's hard to see when you're caught up in the struggle. Hard to believe you're doing all right. Don't let your pain make you do something foolish. Just love yourself. Take this ride on faith. Take it on faith. This too will pass away. Take it on faith. Everything must change. Take it on faith.
You're doing what you need to do. Let it go, take it on faith. It's hard to see when you're caught up in the struggle, hard to believe you're doing all right. Don't let your pain make you do something foolish. Just love yourself. Take this ride on faith. Take it on faith. This too will pass away. Take it on faith. Everything must change. Take it on faith. You're doing what you need to do. Let it go. Take it on faith. The clouds will lift when it's time for them to lift, and not before. You do what you can, but some things are just out of your hands. So don't blame yourself. You might learn something useful while you're down in the hellhole. The sky is gray against the landscape of your heart. It's been that way for far too long. You toss and turn, waiting for a change to come. You wonder where you're going wrong. Take it on faith. This too will pass away. Take it on faith. Everything must change. Take it on faith. You're doing what you need to do. Let it go, take it on faith. Let it go, take it on faith.
Thinking about how we pop out of Earth through our mother's bodies and then we return to Earth. It's actually so beautiful. And when we return to Earth, the pain is gone. So one other thing, we can let go of, allow our loved ones and the beings to go, knowing that they've returned to Source. And, you know, this being human is so precious, but it comes with a price. And we have to know pain. All beings, and when we return and we disappear after our time here, the pain is gone. But fortunately, life is not all pain, and there's so many wonderful things. Someone asked a Tibetan monastic in his 80s who'd been an ordained monk since he was 8 years old, why he continued, why he had devoted his practice, why he devoted his life to practice, and why he continued to practice. And he said, so I can really see the little purple flowers by the side of the road. There's so much beauty here, so much to celebrate. And gratitude is a really, really skillful response. Brené Brown, some of you have raised your hand if you've heard of Brené Brown. Okay, so Brené Brown, I'm going to put that name, B-R-E-N-E Brown. You can check out like a 15-minute TED Talk. She's wonderful. She's a social worker and researcher, and she's done all this work on vulnerability and shame and resilience and creativity and innovation, and how it all is born from sort of our human frailty. This particular book is called The Gifts of Imperfection. There's this mistaken notion that, like, our genius comes from our strength. And, you know, where we somehow are supposed to minimize or cover up or hide away the parts of us that are, you know, sleepy and shy and procrastinate and can't get it right the first time or the second or third or fifth time, and all these things that make us human. But really, those are the very things. That's the very same place out of which comes all the amazing things that we do. It's the birthplace of creativity. But anyway, so she, in her research, she was asking people on these questions around shame and vulnerability, and she stumbled onto the relationship between gratitude and joy. And I just want to read you a couple paragraphs from this wonderful book. One of the most profound changes in my life happened when I got my head around the relationship between gratitude and joy. I always thought that joyful people were grateful people. I mean, why wouldn't they be? They have all of that goodness to be grateful for. But after spending countless hours collecting stories about joy and gratitude, three powerful patterns emerged. One, without exception, every person I interviewed who described living a joyful life or who described themselves as joyful actively practiced gratitude and attributed their joyfulness to their gratitude practice. Two, both joy and gratitude were described as spiritual practices that were bound to a belief in human interconnectedness. And three, people were quick to point out the difference between happiness and joy as the difference between a human emotion that's connected to circumstances, happiness, and a spiritual way of engaging with the world that's connected to practicing gratitude. When it comes to gratitude, the word that jumped out at me throughout this research process is practice. I don't necessarily think another researcher would have been so taken aback, but as someone who thought that knowledge was more important than practice, I found these words to be a call to action. For years, I subscribed to the notion of an attitude of gratitude. I've since learned that attitude is an orientation or a way of thinking, and that having an attitude doesn't always translate into a behavior. For example, it would be reasonable to say that I have a yoga attitude. I think I have a yoga attitude too. The ideals and beliefs that guide my life are very in line with the ideas and beliefs I associate with yoga. I value mindfulness, breathing, and the body-mind-spirit connection. I even have yoga outfits. But let me assure you, my yoga attitude and outfits don't mean jack if you put me on a yoga mat and ask me to stand on my head. As I'm sitting here writing this, I've never practiced yoga. I plan to change that between now and the time you're holding this book in your hand, but to date, I've never put the attitude into action. So where it really matters on the mat, my yoga attitude doesn't count for much. So what does gratitude practice look like? The folks I interviewed talked about keeping gratitude journals, doing daily gratitude meditations or prayers, creating gratitude art, and even stopping during their stressful, busy days to actually say these words out loud, I am grateful for. When the wholehearted talk about gratitude, there are a whole bunch of verbs involved. It seems that gratitude without practice may be a little like faith without works. It's not alive. So I'm coming to the close of my talk. I want to share with you a practice that I do all the time, especially in the middle of the night. I have a phenomenon that some of you may know, which is waking up in the night with worries. And just, it seems to be hardwired in. I don't quite understand it, but it's not every night, but it's a lot of night. I wake up in the night, and whatever might have been a worry in like a lower range worry has suddenly become a 10. And certainly the 9 and 10 worries are up off the charts. My heart races. I'm sure my blood pressure's up. So here's the practice. Because in the night I'm so tired, I do it during the day too, and I teach this wherever I go because it can be really helpful. I use my 10 fingers because they're there and they're tangible. They're always with me, thank goodness. And the job of my mind is given in those moments is to find a name, 10 things that I'm grateful in the present moment. So grateful for in the present moment. So it doesn't have to be, it wouldn't be, you know, like I'm grateful for going to summer camp as a kid. That wouldn't count. You know, or I'm grateful for pizza. No. It has to be 10 things that are happening right now. So, you know, I'm grateful that I'm safe, that I'm physically safe in this moment. And I am right now, too. It's always, you know, always something to be grateful for. I'm grateful that I'm safe, grateful for the darkness, grateful for the quiet. Grateful for my bed and covers and pillows. Grateful for breath. And then 5 more, and they vary. But once the mind comes up to 10, the brain electricity has changed, and I can sleep again. And it doesn't have to be in the middle of the night. It can be any time. Find the moment. First, get the mind into the moment, and then find what's good about this moment. There always is something, even if it's just breath. Breath is wonderful. So gratitude practice can be an intentional practice. It's also a byproduct of mindfulness practice and awareness of impermanence. So I'm really grateful right now to each of you for your practice, for being here tonight when all of us know we could be, and most people are, somewhere else not doing this kind of practice. So the fact that we're here, and to you for listening to me, because I love this stuff and I could go on all night. And I'm just really glad for you for listening. And I want to close with dedication and merit. There's a beautiful Buddhist practice, probably many of you know, or a belief, that when we come together to sit and share Dharma, or I think any gatherings of people where kindness and care and thoughtful reflection are shared, that we generate together, we generate some really good energy. And it's here in our bodies and our hearts, and it's here in the room. And we can send it out with the spirit of generosity. I saw a movie about Mother Teresa, and I remember one clip where she walks in to an orphanage, and there's a young child shivering in a bed, and she reaches down. She doesn't say a word, and she just reaches down, and she puts her hand on the chest of the child, and the child stops shivering. And I think of dedicating the merit of this practice like that. We can let our minds go out to any being who may need good energy like this, and with deep wish and intention, send it out to all beings everywhere, so that all beings everywhere can be free, be peaceful, be happy, be well. May all beings everywhere be free. This song was translated from the Mandarin by Reverend Hung Shur, who is the abbot of this monastery. And the music comes from Lorena McKennett. May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity,
May our minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave our grief and pain. May this boundless light ease the darkness of our endless night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and wise.
If this singing Dharma stuff appeals to you, I do it once a month here in Berkeley, and you can grab a flyer. Thanks again for your kind attention, and Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.